Welcome to episode 21. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHAA, starting with this week's industrial roundup and beginning with standalone community health. Bargaining continues with regards to the Social and Community Services Agreement, as well as for the Health and Allied and the Allied Health Professionals Agreements. We're currently reviewing the medical scientist logs of claim, and thank you to those members who have returned their authorities to ACT and distributed the NERRs and returning them to our office. Just a reminder of the importance of returning the NERRs, that's a process that we've altered in order to ensure that they are compliant with the Fair Work Act. In terms of the health service members, the medical scientist agreement is still going through the process for government approval. That usually takes around about 4 weeks or so. Thank you to those members who attended VHAA's offices for the mental health forum, which was conducted this week. As we have done with all of our EBA forums, a video of that presentation will be available through our website. I also had the honour of attending a meeting of rural CEOs this week at the department. That was an opportunity to describe some of the changes and the effect that those changes have had with regards to our process for communicating and engaging with VHAA members. In particular, we discussed the monthly HRIR managers meetings, which has lifted participation rate from about 10% per month to over 50%. That is, 50% of members participate in one of those meetings each month. And also the VHAA community app, which now has over 250 active users, and these podcasts, which have around about 600 views per month. It was a really valuable opportunity for us to engage with those rural and regional CEOs. And that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. Joining me this week is Principal Workplace Relations Advisor and part-time Richmond team mascot, Tim Nagle. Welcome, Tim.
Good to be here, Stuart.
Tim, would you do the honours with this week's subject box?
Sure.
So for the benefit of those people who are listening rather than watching, would you be good enough to describe this week's subject object?
It's a purple ball.
Is that really the best you can do?
It's a purple bouncy ball.
Tim, you couldn't be more wrong. This is not just a purple bouncy ball, this is a flexi ball. Yeah. Today we're going to be talking about flexible working arrangements. The agreements have provisions regarding flexible work arrangements, which have been introduced this time into the enterprise agreements, but they're not new entitlements as such.
No, so the right to request flexible working arrangements arises out of the Fair Work Act, and it's more specifically Section 65, which is part of the NES. It's an existing entitlement.
And in terms of that existing entitlement, if that was presently the case, was already the case that those rights existed, why specifically reference them in the agreement?
I think it's to assist in bringing it to people's attention, because the use of flexible working arrangements can result in a win-win situation for both employees and employers. It enables employees to maximise their contribution to an employer, and it also enables employers to retain individuals.
So just in terms of the experience that led to it being included, the thing that always stood out for me was from time to time there would be a dispute over a request for flexible work arrangements, and it would become evident that the employee and their representative were familiar with those rights and obligations, and the employer who was responsible for responding to the request was not, because it wasn't in the agreement.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is about ensuring that those rights are known.
So just in terms of where these provisions are in the agreement, and just going through them in turn, where will people find these provisions?
So if they're looking in the Nurses and Midwives Agreement, they'll find it at Clause 16. The Health and Allied or Management and Administrative Workers, it's at 111 and also 89 respectively. The Mental Health Agreement, it has it at Clause 52, and Health Professionals has it at Clause 96.
As overwhelmed as I am with the urge to say bingo after all of that, I'll instead ask, what are the benefits of a flexible work arrangement?
Well, it creates a win-win, because if it doesn't work for either party, then it's not entered into. So the net effect of any agreement for a flexible working arrangement should create a benefit to both parties.
So I guess the first part of that request is that there are certain conditions in terms of when it can be asked for and who can ask for it. So if we start with, when is an employee able to request a flexible work arrangement?
Yeah, so there's certain circumstances in which an employee can request a flexible working arrangement. And those circumstances include where the employee is the parent or has responsibility for the care of a child who is of school age or younger. So that's the first circumstance. The second one is the employee is a carer within the meaning of the Carer Recognition Act. Thirdly, the employee has a disability. Another circumstance is the employee is 55 years or older. The employee's experienced violence from a member of the employee's family is another circumstance. And finally, the employee provides care or support to a member of the employee's immediate family or a member of the employee's household who requires care or support because the member has experienced violence from the member's family.
Just in terms of the reference there to a disability, I think it's always worth emphasising that a disability may be permanent or it may be temporary. It doesn't need to be a permanent disability in order to fit within that criteria. I think it's also worth emphasising that the flexible work arrangement will connect to those responsibilities. That is, the request can't be completely unrelated to that eligibility criteria.
No, really the basis for the request to change the working arrangements needs to be because of those circumstances. So there needs to be a direct causal link between the two.
So what are some of the examples of the kind of changes that might be requested?
So things like changes in hours of work or patterns of work, location of work are all examples of requests that can be made, but it's not exhaustive. This is about what changes in working arrangements can facilitate those circumstances.
I think one of the interesting things with regards to those sort of requests, these are requests that people are making to continue their employment.
Yes.
And the employer wants them to continue their employment, and that's always, even sort of starting from the point of consensus, it's really about accommodating having regard to reasonable business grounds. But before we get to that, there is that reference also to the Carers Act.
Yes.
And it's always a bit difficult when there is a reference to another piece of legislation.
Yeah, that's right.
It doesn't really tell people what that is, what that's about. So could you explain a little bit about the relevance of the Carers Act?
So the Carers Act has got a definition of carer within it, and that's what the Flexible Working Arrangements, or Section 65 of the Act, relies on. And that definition says that a carer is an individual who provides personal care, support and assistance to another individual who needs it because the other individual either A, has a disability, or has a medical condition, including a terminal or chronic illness, has a mental illness, or is frail and aged. I think the important part of the definition is that the person needs the personal care, support and assistance arising out of one of those conditions.
So it's that real connection between that person, between the employee and the person who needs the care, as opposed to it's not a circumstance where they simply know somebody, they are the provider of that care and support.
Yeah, that's right. And look, that definition goes on to say what a care is not. Or you're not a carer merely because you are the spouse or de facto partner or parent or child of that person, or live with the individual who requires care. It actually requires you to be actively providing that personal care support and assistance to that individual.
Okay. Are there any circumstances where a person would not be considered a carer, notwithstanding that they have someone in their life who requires care?
Yeah, just for completeness, it doesn't include people who are providing that sort of service under a contract of service or a contract for the provision of service in the course of doing voluntary work for a charitable welfare or community organisation, or finally as part of the requirements of a course of education or training.
I think one of the most common requests for employers are those people returning from parental leave and a request for part-time hours or hours that are accommodating to the use of childcare.
And that's still present within Section 65. It's an express provision that enables those people to request such arrangements.
My recollection was that at a certain point it used to be under the parental leave provisions, but it's under the flexible work arrangement provisions.
That's right. People won't find it in the parental leave clauses now. It's covered by the flexible working arrangements.
And that right to make that request extends to those people who are taking adoption leave?
Yes, it does.
And Just in terms of the people who are entitled to make a request, so we've talked about the circumstances under which somebody may trigger that right, but not every employee has the entitlement to make that request. Who does and who doesn't?
No, so the criteria to be able to be entitled to make the request is that the employee has completed at least 12 months of continuous service with the employer. For a casual employee, the employee is a long-term casual employee of the employer immediately before making the request, and they've got an ongoing expectation of work as well. So you can still make the request, but you need to fit that criteria if you've got the entitlement under the Act or the agreement to make it.
So we've talked about which circumstances can entitle a person to make a request and which employees are entitled to make a request. Probably the next thing to cover is what's the process involved in making a request?
Yeah, so the request needs to be in writing, and it also needs to set out the details of the change sought and the reasons for the change.
So just to emphasise that, not just the details of the change sought, but the reason.
That's right. Yes.
And I would imagine that should be articulated in the clearest manner possible.
Yeah, exactly. And look, my experience is this is often where the process sort of goes off course early on, is that it's not clear why they're making the request, because it's really that why that allows the employer and the employee to get together and come up with some, or discuss how that may be accommodated.
It's fair to say that there have been an increasing number of disputes with regards to requests for flexible work arrangements, and almost inevitably a large part of the dispute is actually trying to establish the reason for the request.
Yeah, and look, my experience is that often parties get quite far down the process without having that why discussion. So it would be real useful to have that at the start.
So an employee makes a request in writing and must cover certain information, but I think there's an important thing to emphasise that there is a time limit involved for responding.
Yeah, so the employer has 21 days to respond, and that's not to mean that the employer should wait till the 21 days are finished, because it may be is that if the person hasn't covered off the why, for instance, that they need to communicate with them to try and elicit that through the process. But overall, they've got 21 days to respond to the request.
And if I could just anticipate a question, that's 21 calendar days, that is not 21 business days.
No, that's right.
And in terms of the process, if an employer agrees to the request?
So if they agree, then they should provide the employee with a written response, just stating that it is agreed to and what the arrangements are. And it's also useful to put in the full agreement into that sort of response as well, because often employers will maybe make it time limited, for example, or make it subject to a review at a certain point or a certain trigger point. So whatever the agreement is, if it is agreed to, should be contained within that response.
I think that's really essential in terms of the review and time-limited nature, particularly that the circumstances that support the flexible work arrangement may change or may cease, or the experience of the flexible work arrangement may not be satisfactory for the employer or for the employee.
No, that's right. I mean, the number of times that, for instance, where parents have returned to work early till the child reaches school age, I mean, that will often change throughout that process. So having a record of what's agreed and when the review trigger points are is really important. Most employers will do that yearly, for instance, but there's really no limitation on what's agreed in that space. It's important that it's clear.
Clarity, I think, is the number one objective. I think also care should be taken as to the type of flexible work arrangement. If it is that it's a job share arrangement, for example, then it's useful to have built-in review processes so that the necessary care and attention is being given to make sure that that arrangement succeeds.
Yeah, I mean, it's got flow-on effects to replacement staff and others, so the more clarity, both for the individual requesting the flexible working arrangements, but also others that it flows onto, is really important.
So those are the circumstances where the request is agreed to. But what if the request is not agreed to? What are the circumstances that an employer is permitted to not agree to a request?
Yeah, so an employer can only refuse a request on reasonable business grounds, and the Act, Section 65 of the Act, gives some examples of what those reasonable business grounds may be. So it includes that the new working arrangements requested by the employee would be too costly for the employer. Also that there is no capacity to change the working arrangements of other employees to accommodate the new working arrangements requested by the employee. Another business ground cited is that it would be impractical to change the working arrangements of other employees or recruit new employees to accommodate the new working arrangements requested by the employee. The fourth one cited is that the new working arrangements requested by the employee would be likely to result in a significant loss to efficiency or productivity. And finally, that the new working arrangements requested by the employee would be likely to have a significant negative impact on customer service.
So just in terms of that, it's probably worth and necessary to emphasise reasonable business grounds. You needn't satisfy all of those requirements. Any one of them will do. And these are examples of reasonable business grounds. I think the thing that I've noticed that from time to time, an employer will have a strong emotional reaction to the request without necessarily testing those items.
No, look, it really needs to be genuine, reasonable business grounds. So the employer needs to be able to demonstrate that those reasons are sound and defensible. They're not exhaustive, as you said, that you don't have to meet all of those, and there may be more that are relevant to particular workplaces. But identifying and being able to articulate and defend what the business ground is that you are refusing the request on is absolutely essential.
Mm. I think being able to articulate it is a really key point, but being able to demonstrate that you've genuinely turned your mind.
Yes, because it may be that the reasons for the change and what's been requested may be able to be accommodated in a different way. So it's exploring those options through those discussions that are really important, because the solution may be something that neither party thought about in the first instance.
I'll come back to that idea of an alternate of some point in between in just a moment. But in terms of that requirement to provide a response within 21 days, in the way in which that response is given, that it must be given, reasons must be identified.
Mm, that's right. That's about the reasons.
Not a simple thumbs up or thumbs down?
No.
One observation I would make about Section 65, but also I'd make with respect to the provisions obviously in the agreement, is that the way it's put is almost like a binary proposition. That is, a request is made and it's either agreed to or not agreed, but good practice really requires something else.
Yeah, I mean, it may be that that another alternative is acceptable to both parties, and really what we're trying to do is create a win-win situation, so there needs to be consideration given to alternatives.
And I think it's often the case that an employer can accommodate, get to the outcome the employee wants, but in a way other than the one proposed by the employee. Mm. And that's actually a productive thing, but what it requires is that the parties are engaging with each other in a genuine fashion. And I would note that at times some employee representatives have made the mistake, I think, of treating it as a binary proposition rather than trying to work through to a solution that does meet the objectives of the employee. Mm. But I think that will develop over time.
And if you look at the explanatory memorandum, it's very clear that those discussions should take place and alternatives should be considered.
So what happens if there is a disagreement with regards to a request for a flexible work arrangement? That is, the parties can't reach an agreement or an accommodation and the request is ultimately refused.
So, I mean, there is an ability under the agreement to utilise the dispute resolution process to resolve that difference.
Now, we didn't have to put a provision in there with regards to dispute resolution to the Commission as such, but what are the reasons for doing so?
Well, it gives people a process. I mean, the Commission are used to assisting parties resolve differences, and I think it's a useful addition to have that third party who has expertise in that resolution process to be involved in the process.
So I think it's worth emphasising that having regard for Section 65, which is part of the National Employment Standard, that if in the absence of utilising a dispute resolution procedure such as the Commission, the matter can really only go to court, and that the Commission is a much better place for employees and employers in resolving issues.
And look, our experience, as you would know, Stuart, is that the vast majority of disputes are resolved at the Commission.
I'd go further than that. The majority are resolved through conciliation.
That's right.
Are you aware of any flexible work arrangement requests that have been arbitrated?
There is one that was arbitrated by Commissioner Gregory in another field. That turned more on the specific working arrangement clause in the agreement as opposed to the request for a flexible working arrangement. But I'm not aware of any others that have just turned on the flexible working arrangement request.
Any within our sector?
No, not that I'm aware of.
It is possible that some requests can create confusion. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, it comes back to clarity, because we know that whilst the flexible working arrangement request and Section 65 of the Fair Work Act is one mechanism, there are other mechanisms that can blur the lines between what the process and considerations are. For instance, the discrimination laws have an obligation on employers to consider in the context of a disability, which is one of the considerations or the circumstances in the flexible working arrangements clause, whether the employer can adjust the role to accommodate the disability. So it has the same sort, it's sort of in the same space, but the process and the considerations are different. So it's very important that when a request is made for a change, whether it's in working arrangements or the role, that the employee and the employer are both very clear about what section or what process, what gives rise to the request, and then what process and considerations follow.
Just that point with regards to the distinction between a request for a flexible working arrangement under either Section 65 or these provisions of the agreements and the request for a reasonable adjustment under discrimination law. So there's a distinguishing feature between the determinants there, one of which is on you may only refuse on reasonable business grounds, but in the context of something like discrimination, it's different.
Yeah, you're talking more about the inherent requirements of a role, and you're much more reliant on detailed medical information and that sort of thing.
So one of the things that we are getting a lot of information on is that there are more and more of these requests. So employers will have to ensure that their processes are well developed in order to respond to them in a thoughtful way within the prescribed timeframe. So just in terms of a summary of these provisions.
So I think it's in terms of important points for dealing with flexible working request or arrangement request, I think the important thing, one of the important things is to treat each case on its merits. This is one of those circumstances where it's difficult to have a blanket rule, and you shouldn't have a blanket rule. Each circumstance should be treated on its own merits. The second important point is to be very clear about what the process is, what legislation the request is being made under or the agreement, and therefore what the process and the considerations are and the requirements, the entitlements and obligations on both parties.
I think this is one of the items that was identified as an implementation issue through our group process. And as part of that, what I noticed is that we had a look at some of the Fair Work Ombudsman material, which really did emphasise the need for collaboration and engagement between the parties when these requests are made.
And the Ombudsman released quite a good guide in terms of flexible working arrangements, so it's well worth employers having a look at, and the employees as well. In terms of other key points, the focus should be on the circumstances on which the request is being made, what is being requested, and why it is being requested, and that enables that sort of collaborative problem-solving approach.
I think if it is that those items, the basis for the request is not clear, then that's a ground to really seek more information.
Yeah, that's right. Alternatives to just refusing the request should be considered where possible.
Because there's almost always a better answer than no.
Yeah, that's right. And careful thought should be given to whether there are business grounds on which to refuse a request, and the precise basis for that, those business grounds should be articulated. And finally, the response should always obviously be given within 21 days.
Thank you for joining us today, Tim, and taking us through the flexible work arrangement provisions.
Thanks, Stuart.
And thank you, Flexible.